Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Now your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Eric Mill, the Director of Cloud Strategy in the Technology Transformation Service in the General Services Administration. Eric, always a pleasure to catch up. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jason.
We are talking about something that FedRAMP, Federal Risk Authorization Management Program, released just recently, something called the Emerging Technology Framework. It came out in January and coming up in March 11th, I think comments are due. So let's get into it, talk a little bit about the framework at a high level, discuss what it is and what's in it.
So the goal of the Emerging Technology Framework for FedRAMP is to describe how FedRAMP's going to do its part to help the federal government get the benefit of emerging technologies, starting with artificial intelligence and generative artificial intelligence in particular. You know, the government is in many ways sometimes used to being a late adopter on some of these technologies. And, you know, this framework is specifically about positioning us differently. You know, maybe we won't be right at the bleeding edge before the risks are understood. This is a risk management program, but we want folks to actually be able to get in there and not lag years behind, as sometimes, you know, the government has been known to do. So this is strategically important for the program. What we're doing here is FedRAMP is prioritizing its work around the strategic goals that the government has. Right? It's not just a first in, first out program. And, you know, that is breaking a little bit of ground for the program, but that's something we think is a good thing. Right? And as we get into that, as we engage in a prioritization process for FedRAMP, it's really important for what FedRAMP does that be well understood, be transparent to stakeholders, that it be understood as fair and clear. So that's the foundation we're trying to lay with this framework right now.
The framework goes into details about certain things. In some ways, it's setting the path for the future of the FedRAMP program. Talk a little bit about what that path looks like. What are you doing in this framework that also can apply to more broadly to FedRAMP?
Part of the framework is about, you know, how we're going to go about it from a governance perspective. So how the FedRAMP board is involved, how different stakeholders are involved. But there's a pretty significant component of this too, which is how do we actually approach measuring what it is that we're prioritizing? How do we strike the right balance? And then, you know, how do we operationalize that? How is it that we are prioritizing this thing in effect? And that means having to come up with things like limits, right? So part of what you see in the framework is that the proposal here is that we stop at three, right? When we have three services that are based around chatbots, for example, using generative AI, and we've prioritized three of those things, we're going to stop prioritizing that, you know, until we come back around and think again about what the priorities of FedRAMP should be, right? And that is making sure that when we say prioritize, we're actually prioritizing. And we're not just focusing on AI as a program. FedRAMP is a program for the entire cloud market. But we want to be able to, you know, support this initiative. So this is important strategically for figuring out how we answer those kind of questions that are not at all totally AI specific.
You mentioned this idea of three is a number, and that can be concerning to people, and that's probably an area in the framework where you'll get a lot of feedback on. Somebody will say, well, why did you pick Eric instead of Jason, and that's not fair? Am I getting cut out of the market, or do I miss out on the joint authorization board, or I know that's being replaced in the OMB memo of what they'll call it, the technical advisory board, or the something equivalent. But is that something that you want some feedback on from industry? Is that part of this? As you said, you want comments by March 11th. Tell us what we're missing. Tell us what we did well. Tell us what we need to do better.
Yes, right. So that is something we would welcome feedback on. It is all up for public comment. There are things that we included in the blog post that accompanied the release of the framework. We had some prompts and questions where we're really especially looking for some feedback on it. But all of this stuff, like, the goal here is to prioritize, right? And so if folks look at that and they think, well, that's one way to go about it, but like you would achieve your goal in a better way in this other way, please articulate that. That's going to be the most helpful for us.
One of the things that stood out to me when I looked at the Emerging Technology Framework is this idea of really the focus on AI, LLMs, large language models. Obviously, we know the EO. We know that's an important piece. We know everyone loves to talk about AI and large language models. But really, what was the signal that said, hey, this is where we're going to start first with the Emerging Technology Framework? Because you also could have started in many other places. And I'm sure there was also other cybersecurity type things. There was also other technology areas that you could have said, let's go down that path. Why AI and LLMs?
You could probably ask that same question no matter what we started with. And you have to start somewhere. And this, we are starting this at a time when the program is absolutely seeing demand from both cloud providers and agencies around artificial intelligence. And the timing of this made a lot of sense. And you know, the reason you see this in the executive order is the same reasons that we are working on doing this, right? It's a thing that people want to be able to make sure we're getting the best of while managing the risks that are involved in it and making sure that we're in the game on this.
When you say there's a lot of interest from the vendors, have you seen a spike in the last 6 months, year, in terms of the numbers that are coming to the Joint Authorization Board or going through the agency authorization process, or just being questions you're getting and saying, hey, how can we get this tool that may live on platform X through the FedRAMP process?
We definitely are. We are seeing some services that have already been in the marketplace that have added AI capabilities. We're seeing things come in the agency review process. We're expecting that to go up and not down. So it is something where we're not responding to an abstract thing, but to the things that we actually see coming in front of us.
At the same time, have you seen other interests around emerging technologies, or because AI is the flavor of the day, the bright, shiny object, whatever analogy you want to use, that's really been the one that's been predominant?
It's going to be a little bit, right, until we pursue the next set of emerging technologies that might work under this framework. And when we do, it's going to be in consultation with a bunch of people. But this is going to be, you know, FedRAMP's opportunity to help take what are very clearly emerging as government priorities for good, visible reasons, and helping accelerate them a little bit through the federal government. You know, I don't know what those are going to be, but there are things that are emerging all over the place that, you know, could be of help to the federal government. You know, we talk a lot about multi-factor authentication that has been around a long time as a concept, and there's been a special push on it recently. But, you know, things like passkeys in that field specifically are emerging. We've been talking a lot about memory safety recently in the government. That is not necessarily an emerging concept, but with a lot of the attention and investment that's gone into it, there are a lot of new tools, you know, language interoperability things that have emerged to help accelerate that process. So there's, I think, a bevy of options for us to look at when the time comes.
Do AI tools, when they're connected to somebody else's product, and again, I have a platform, this platform's gone through FedRAMP, okay, now I'm adding this AI capability on top of it. Does that require is it a bigger lift? Is it any more challenging than any other piece of software, any other capability that wants to go through the process? Have you seen any kind of trends around what it takes to get an AI tool? And again, there are 101 different ones, anything from, you know, RPA, robotics process automation, to something much more advanced for analytics. But generally speaking, are you seeing anything that AI is more difficult or less difficult or just about the same as any other cloud capability?
Though we do see demand going up, it is still, I mean, by just raw numbers, right? We are still talking early days here, so it might be a little premature to talk about hard trends. I think one of the concepts that we're totally expecting people to comment on the framework is going to speak to, you know, how are you going to authorize these products? Like, is there anything interesting because of the fact that it's AI about what you're going to do? And we welcome that feedback. And one of the most interesting pieces that you could see in that framework is how we're approaching benchmarking. And there may not be a perfect answer to how to measure, how to benchmark things to make sure that they are actually, you know, generative AI the way that you expect, and of some passable enough level of quality that it's worth everybody's time. But that is going to be, you know, the work that the FedRAMP team and GSA does to implement that is going to be, I think, very predictive of some of the challenges that they need to deal with from an authorization perspective.
As you're putting this framework together, there's always things you want to put in, things you take out, things that didn't make the cut. Is there anything that you had to think differently about as you put the emerging framework together?
The most interesting challenge of that is what I was starting to speak to a little bit in the previous answer, which is measurement. And I'll give a little bit more color on that. We want to make sure that as we prioritize generative AI-based services, that we are focused on the services that really are doing something new. They in fact, are part of this emerging zeitgeist, right? It's AI as a concept, of course, has been around a long time. And we want to make sure that we're using a quantitative and data-based way of focusing our efforts on the newer things that are doing the things that only those newer technologies can. We also are very much not trying to set ourselves up as the arbiter of truth around what constitutes, you know, good enough for government type feature performance for artificial intelligence. That is not the purpose of the prioritization framework. And achieving the former without going too far down the road of the latter is, I think, one of the central challenges of this framework. We asked about that very publicly on the blog post, would really encourage folks to engage on that topic. And what you see in the framework is us attempting to thread that needle, especially by focusing on the results that third parties are measuring out there on leaderboards and bring them to a reasonable enough quality threshold that we know we're talking about generative AI and we know we're talking about something that is going to bring value.
Folks submit their comments. What's your timing to get the framework finalized? It's, of course, going to be a living document. You'll update it, whether it's annually or every 6 months or every week, whatever it is. But what's your, what's your goal to kind of get this through the process and get the AI, LLMs, emerging technology piece going?
In terms of providing final guidance, there's not a hard date we're tracking to right now. We're not going to sit on this for a long time. I think we're talking, you know, weeks, not months here. But it also is going to depend to some extent, too, on how substantive the comments that we get are. And so that, you know, we definitely want to make sure that we're not, you know, just going through the motions here, but that we are actually reading everything people wrote and incorporating it responsibly. So we will see how long it takes, but we'll be on it.
Right now, are there any plans for potential industry sessions, industry feedback sessions that you've, again, once you get those comments in, the next step is adjudication, but this is a complicated topic. AI is new. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement about it. Is there anything folks should look out for beyond the final guidance in the coming weeks and months?
There's nothing planned right now to talk about that, but I think we're very much expecting, as you mentioned, for this to be an iterative process. This is not going to be the only bite at the apple for engaging with the FedRAMP team about this framework. So, and folks should absolutely feel free to reach out and suggest how we can do better on that.
Comments are due March 11th. Before we switch topics and talk a little bit more broadly, what do you want folks to, especially industry and or agencies and folks in the government to comment on? What do you want them to know about the framework? What's really important to you that they, hey, if there's nothing else you do, we want to know about X. Or, hey, if you do nothing else, please give us feedback on Y. Is there anything you'd point to say, you know, what's your message to industry and or agencies around the framework?
We put a lot of effort into that post to sharpen those questions to exactly that answer. And so absolutely encourage folks to go read the announcement and focus on those questions. Definitely chief among them is, you know, I think this question of, are we measuring this right? I mean, and I think to the point you brought up around prioritization, right? The concept of prioritization means making some kind of hard choice somewhere. And so when the agency does that, we want to know that at the very least, everybody understood why we would make that decision and, you know, what factors went into that. And so make sure that we are expressing clearly enough how we're going to make that decision.
Eric, on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. My guest today is Eric Mill, the Director of Cloud Strategy at the Technology Transformation Service in GSA. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Eric Mill, the Director of Cloud Strategy in the Technology Transformation Service in the General Services Administration. Eric, I want to move more broadly than just the emerging technology framework. We talked a lot about it. The one thing that comes out to me is, okay, shiny object is AI, LLMs, but there's the run-of-the-mill, again, no pun intended, you'll forgive me on that, cloud services are still really important to a lot of agencies. Is that a concern from your perspective, from GSA's PMO's perspective, how to strike that right balance? You could get 1,000 people with their AI tools and still have a backlog of 1,000 just software as a service, platform as a service type of services that have nothing to do with AI that still need to get through. Like, are you worried about that backlog, that rush? And how do you strike the balance?
We don't see the emerging technology framework as creating any sort of additional, you know, concerns. And if anything, it's going to help us prioritize, as is the goal, right? So there's always some kind of backlog and review and a queue process here. And so we're focused on just making sure we can reason about that in a clear way and that we are prioritizing. But there is so much more going on with FedRAMP in addition to what's going on with the emerging technology framework. We have a pretty ambitious vision for what GSA is going to be working on. You obviously could see a lot of that in the draft OMB memorandum. You know, the GSA team here, the FedRAMP team, read through the public comments that folks filed in that OMB memorandum as well, knowing that it is in many ways feedback to the program as well about how GSA can be executing on these things. And so I think as we we roll out, there will be public things that we start talking through that about how we're going to implement some of the principles that you see reflected in the memo that are part of the goals that I think a lot of stakeholders have for the program that are consonant with GSA's and the FedRAMP program's lived experience. You know, we want to be a program here that is keeping pace with the marketplace as it's changed, right? I think that one of the theories of the case that you can see in that draft OMB memorandum is the concept that the commercial cloud marketplace in particular has changed dramatically in the last 13 years. One of the ways it's changed is that there are just so many more because the nature of some of these cloud services has become more focused. Instead of just being infrastructure that does every possible thing, you're talking about services that optimize for one thing well or a few things well. And so there are many, many more. And I should say, certainly that does create challenges that people see in terms of backlogs and review queues. And I think we are very intent on making sure that the urgency we also see around accelerating the government's use of emerging technologies doesn't compete with those things. It doesn't worsen the problem. I think that's, you know, part of what that will mean, of course, is there is a prioritization process that has some limits associated. That's how we're ultimately going to make sure that the program stays responsive. But we're very engaged on short and long-term structural change to make sure that the program is operating at the pace that it should, that in general we are treating speed as the security property that we know that cloud providers and agencies all believe in as well. That's the spirit that you should see from us, and we'll have a lot more to say later this year.
I appreciate you coming back around to the issue that the emerging technology framework could create a lot of excitement, could create a lot of push for people to submit their AI capabilities, LLM capabilities into FedRAMP that just could make your life and that the office's life a lot more difficult. The OMB memo, you brought that up too. Any status update you can give? I know it's not your memo, but generally speaking, you said you got to review the comments. Anything that stands out to you from those comments? Anything that you'd be willing to offer? Again, I know it's OMB's memo, so you don't want to speak for them.
It is, in fact, OMB's memo, and I don't want to speak for them. But, I mean, that's what I was trying to say, is that we read the comments in many ways as if they were addressed to GSA. Right? And the FedRAMP program and team sees all the same things that everybody else is seeing about how the cloud marketplace has changed. And in some ways, they see it more viscerally because it turns up, you know, in their lives in the forms of sometimes more work or sometimes just more thorny questions or needing to engage on an emerging technology framework. So it is absolutely something that we obviously work very closely with our partners at OMB and feel a really strong shared vision for what it means to modernize FedRAMP. And we're really excited to turn that into concrete steps that become visceral and felt by the cloud providers in the program and by agencies.
I appreciate that. I know it's a tough question because it is not your memo, and you all are in many ways, the implementation arm of that memo, whatever the final one looks like. So let's talk about some other things. What else should we expect from FedRAMP and or cloud security more broadly? Because your portfolio, I'm sure, is more than just FedRAMP. Over the next 12 months, are there other things that you'd want to make sure that vendors know about? Any other things that you would like to highlight that would maybe say, hey, this is how we're going to continue to keep the rigor of cloud security, but maybe speed it up? I know there's the cloud security law that you all are also implementing, something else that causes you a lot more fun and challenges.
I'll get into a couple of things, but sort of there's a foundational element, which is how the program measures success and understands what the customer's experiences, what the cloud provider's experiences, what the agency experiences. It should be the case that, you know, GSA's and FedRAMP's understanding of how long it takes to get FedRAMP, how much it costs, that what we think it costs and what we think it takes is the same as what the cloud providers think. One of the exercises that we're going to be engaged on this year is really updating what some of the key metrics are around that and talking pretty directly with stakeholders before we finalize those things and keeping a feedback loop so that we are really orienting ourselves formally as a custom-oriented program in that way. So metrics is certainly one of those, and I think you'll see us engaging on that in a pretty public way. Maybe in a more tangible, mechanical sense, I think I mentioned before that we're definitely focused on speed as a security property. we're very interested in identifying cloud providers that want to pilot different ways of work. There has never been kind of a more open mind to looking at process changes and piloting different approaches that, you know, don't lower the bar for security, but allow us to focus the review energy on the process, on the items that we all understand are the most closely tied to security. And you're going to see that spirit come through in our work and how we engage with cloud providers.
You mentioned speed without giving up rigor. I think that's always been the key to FedRAMP. We've talked in the years past about the use of OSCAL. We've talked about years past and the use of continuous monitoring. Are both of those on tap as well, saying how can we continue to pursue that? I know the OSCAL issue has been a big challenge. I've heard from vendors, it's the chicken or the egg. Well, when are you going to want it? Well, when are you going to give it to me? Well, I'm not going to give it to you until you want it, but I'm not going to want it until you have it. So I think there's a bit of a round robin going on with OSCAL, at least from what I've heard from a few vendors.
Yeah, and that is not an uncommon story with interoperability standards, I think. OSCAL and automation is something, I mean, I think you've heard FedRAMP talk about that for a long time. I think what you're going to see over the course of, you know, the course of this year and going forward is real gates opening and process changes that make use of those things to take humans out of the loop where they don't need to be for the folks out there who are hungry to actually be, you know, submitting some of these things or self-validating things through scripts and automation. Like, we want to be working sort of, you know, tech to tech to figure out how that stuff should work and get real, you know, rough consensus and running code as an approach here to this work.
Eric, I've kept you a long time. We've talked a lot about different topics around FedRAMP, the emerging technology framework, which again, the comments due by March 11th will remind folks once again. We'll link to the blog post on federalnewsnetwork.com as well to make it easy to find. But I just want to give you a last word here about what's the message around FedRAMP, around cloud security even more broadly that you want to make sure industry knows. Industry loves to hate FedRAMP or hates to love it or something when it comes to we realize the benefits, but it's can be arduous, it can be difficult, but we get why it's there, and I think generally they're supportive of it. What's your message to them?
My message is what you're hearing in this interview, I hope, is, you know, a sense of energy and responsiveness for the program wants to hear where it can change and where it can do a better job of threading that eternal needle of speed, security, and everything else people want from the system. It is not trivial to do, but it is the whole job of the program. And I think there's going to be not just this emerging technology framework, but a pretty good series of feedback opportunities over the course of the year. And I really encourage folks to come at that with the spirit of improving these processes. Please bring up things that maybe died on the vine a few years ago, but, you know, let's not let the past foreclose the future. There's not been a more open-minded period of time in the program than I think what's there right now.
Excellent advice. If folks cannot help make the change, they can't have a reason to complain that didn't change fast enough or change in a direction that they wanted to see. Let me thank my guest, Eric Mills, the Director of Cloud Strategy at the Technology Transformation Service in the General Services Administration. Eric, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to talk to you.
I'm Jason Miller, and when we return, we'll shift gears to hear from the Marine Corps about their progress in meeting cyber goals. But first, we have to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller.
I'm here with Sherry Thomas, the Cyber Technology Officer and Technical Director for the Marine Corps Cyberspace Command, Marine Corps Space Command, and the Marine Corps Information Command. Sherry, thanks so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with some basics based on where you sit and your title. What does the Marine Corps priorities look like for 2024 around the things that you're covering? Obviously, cyber and network and data, there's a lot there. So I'll kind of give you that starting off point of what are some of your top priorities for 2024?
So the main thing that we're looking for in terms of the Marine Corps is fighting smart, and fighting smart in terms of supporting the network for force design. What that means is maneuver warfare, information, and data is centric to the entire thing. Information is combat power. So we're trying to do that in terms of the competition and the way of deterring conflict. We're going to be have will, intellect, initiative, and ruthless opportunity. So there's a couple of aspects to that. One is the technology side. Another one is people and the awareness side of it, the training. So we're looking across the entire .MILPLEOP life cycle of every single program, from the tactical edge to the enterprise, unifying the network on the unclassified and the classified sides.
A lot to dig out. Let me take a half a step back and start with the network side of it. You talk about unifying the network on the multiple classification levels into a single enterprise. Where is the Marine Corps today in that process?
The Marine Corps is in the process. We've started a few years ago, and now we're in iterative phases. We do it through sprint cycles. And then we go lessons learned, and we go back on user feedback on what they gain, what we gain. We're trying to see in terms of the enterprise-level products, how it reaches down in terms of tactical-level users, but also ensuring that the tactical level still has the control that they need and be able to operate in DDL, distributed low-bandwidth environment, and at the same time enforce policy and enforce technical acumen from the enterprise level.
From a numbers perspective, and maybe you can quantify in some way, when you started this process, did the Marines have 100 networks? Now we're down to 50? Or is there some sort of way to say, hey, this is how we're measuring our progress to consolidate and simplify the network, but keep it obviously rigorous from a cyber perspective?
There are many disparate networks that were out there. One, on the Marine Corps side, we have tactical edge networks at the Marine Expeditionary Forces and the MAR Force. And then at the enterprise level, we have the MCEN, Marine Corps Enterprise Network. And then going forward, it's going to be the Marine Corps Warfighting Network. What I come to that with is we want to see the totality of the information. For example, a tactical level user needs to be able to communicate with somebody else that's distributed and far away. Right? That's the way the Marine Corps operates in general. We need to do that in the technology space too. To allow for that, we condense all these networks, but what we were able to see was the cybersecurity posture was not at the same level. Now when you unify it, you bring it to the same level. The second part of that is you don't have redundant transport mechanism. You don't need satellite pipes or cellular pipes, even equipment, for example, networking equipment, hardware, software tool. You can have enterprise-level tools that will cater to a larger user base based on best case scenario, instead of having to buy separate in different sense. So it's a cost savings thing, it's a training alleviation, and it's also from the data side, we are able to move data back and forth with the appropriate network that's available.
Let me try to put a finer point on it then. Have you been able to reduce the number of networks? And can you give me an example of, it used to take us X amount of hops to do something, now we're doing it in fewer hops, or the data sharing is easier. I think folks, when they think about network consolidation, they think, oh, they'll go from 20 to 1 or whatever the numbers are. Is there any way to kind of give us an example of the progress you've made?
So, for example, the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force and the 3rd, so the 3rd started first, right? The 3rd, they were able to come into the MCEN relative ease because they said, you know what, I'm not going to be able to fund my own thing and I'm not going to be able to provide my own cybersecurity. Now we're doing the same thing in terms of those lessons learned in that theater in the 1st and the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force. What's critical in the 1st? 1st operates jointly with the 3rd. And for them to operate together, it can't be, hey, I can't see each other. I need to be in a single unified MCEN. That's one example. The numbers you stated, what I saw was 17 different cloud instances in the Marine Corps. If we can consolidate those cloud instances in, some vendors have the same, but they're all stovepiped, and you're not able to see the data. So we have this integrated mission data fabric that's trying to bring all of that together. And I'd say not just the Marine Corps side, right? As mentioned in my title, I have the information and too. So the information is looking at, for example, C2IE, the information battle space, and PAI OSINT information. That will be gold, a gold mine or treasure trove of all this disparate data that's available to include. Then I have the intel data, the mission command data, the manpower reserve data, the POR systems, funding data, the aviation platforms. Everybody is consuming and producing a lot of data. We just need to bring it all together. And then from the networking standpoint, most people should be tracking the 7 pillars of zero trust. This will alleviate all of the problems in terms of individuals trying to get to that state, and then the entire Marine Corps at one level providing that. a tail to that is once the unification happens on the Marine Corps side, this will help in terms of being JADC2 interoperability, joint with our service partners, and coalition with our bilats or Five Eyes or any other partner nations. And then there's this CyberComm initiative in terms of big data platform, JCC2, JIQUA. JIQUA's going to 2.0. So once it's all together, it helps in terms of a single repository containing all the information. But again, I am not putting it into one platform or one tool. It's a mesh.
I'm glad you brought this up, that it's a mesh. It's not this idea of one network to rule them all. It's this idea of connecting these disparate networks in a way that is integrates information, integrates technologies, has interoperability. So before we move, you mentioned zero trust. Before we move there, let me just ask you, are there some goals that your office and your command has for 2024 in terms of bringing in the expeditionary force one, or three, and two, like bring them all together? Do you have some specific goals you're aiming for?
Yes, we do have goals. So three things that I bring to attention in terms of alignment. Alignment is bringing them together. And how are we doing it? We're going to do Nipper first. We're going to do the first and the second Marine Expeditionary Forces in the near term, which is within the next 6 to 12 months on the Nipper side. And then once those lessons are learned on the Nipper side, we're going to translate that into the Zipper side, into secret networks. So that's the alignment piece. The divestiture piece is there's an initiative at the Department of Navy level called Cattle Drive, which is getting rid of legacy systems, legacy products, legacy software, hardware, and going after new. I don't look at it as fully greenfield. There is not possible to do that. So we go in iterative steps. The brownfield that I'm looking at is three phases of brownfield, like dark brown to light brown, if you will. What that means is the dark brown is not good hardware, not good software, so I may have to go to I'll never reach a cloud-native access point or any cloud processing or AI or any of that. So we got to figure that out in terms of network total change. In the light brown area, I'll be able to go, you know, say onesie, twosie type changes, router switches or policy enforcements that can change on the network to make them cloud access or how to share data easier. That's a divestiture piece, and then hopefully I can see some cost return on that going after future technologies faster. And that's the third piece of it, which is the velocity. I want to get it out quicker than this iterative phase, which is, you know, it might take 5 to 10 years, but I need to accelerate that a little bit too.
You mentioned that you've already transitioned a lot of the expeditionary force, the third one, to the Marine Enterprise Network. Can you talk about what was it, maybe one or two of the lessons learned that stood out to you that you are now applying to as you move the first and the second over there?
Redundancy of hardware, a lot of switches, routers, a lot of transport that was redundant too. For example, 5G or satellite. We were doing it on the MixSend and are also providing it on the third is procuring it separately. If we collapse that, then it's best case value added because now the providers don't have a delineation or prioritization of who gets what at what point. The Marine Corps in total can control it. So that is some of the lessons, and I'm seeing those same similarities at the 1MEF and 2MEF once we are learning about how their networks are built out. There's a lot of disparate tools, and on the software side, there's a lot of similar software, for example, cybersecurity software or data management software, data plane, that both are architecting at the same time. So this is where I see why we don't need to stovepipe that. We'll just bridge it all together.
We have to take a break. My guest today is Sherry Thomas, the Cyber Technology Officer and Technical Director for the Marine Corps Cyberspace Command, the Marine Corps Space Command, and the Marine Corps Information Command. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Sherry Thomas, the Cyber Technology Officer and Technical Director for the Marine Corps Cyberspace Command, the Marine Corps Space Command, and the Marine Corps Information Command.
I'm going to move over to Zero Trust. You mentioned that. It's another big initiative across, obviously, not just the Marine Corps, but across the entire Defense Department. I know, talking with the folks at OSD CIO's office, everybody submitted their implementation plans and their analysis. Give me a sense of what are some of those big priorities for the Marine Corps when it comes to zero trust as you head into the new year and beyond?
We are ahead of the curve, so we like that. And the reason for that is we started looking at this in terms of different pillars. So the user pillar, the data pillar, the analytics pillar, the SOAR capabilities, looking across all of that in terms of a Department of Navy has an information superiority vision, which is a data centricity. And I'm looking at foundational data management practices, data platforms, automation, AI, and then improving the workforce at the same time, right? The data literacy and awareness of the whole thing. So from the individual pillar standpoint, I got a big data platform, I got enterprise data coming in, I got tactical data. The users, I'm able to put more sensors on those networks. I'm able to figure out in terms of user behavior, user analytics, and then transpose that into the both the big data platform and into SIEM SOAR, short-term analytics storage, anomaly detection, the whole nine yards in terms of the totality of all of it. Why I can do that? Because I'm unifying the network, right? That's the critical piece of it. I'm not doing it on individual networks anymore. I'm putting it all together and saying one entity, which is the cybersecurity provider for the entire Marine Corps, can see the entirety of the structure, and then we can reach down all the way to the tactical edge if there's no patches or if there's no awareness of what's going on in terms of a cybersecurity profile.
A lot of the military services and defense agencies looked at what they already were using today, what cybersecurity tools were in place and capabilities, and said, okay, how does this apply to the zero trust pillars, the 97 or 90 plus odd requirements that DoD laid out for their target architecture? You know, generally speaking, how well did the Marine Corps do? You said you were ahead of the game, but do you feel like you're further ahead on meeting the target architecture goals than you realized because you had all these good tools in place? Give me a sense of what the zero trust journeys has been for you and will continue to be.
So what I mean by ahead of the curve is we looked at both the threshold and the objective requirements, and we did in terms of what are the capabilities that are currently available on the Marine Corps Enterprise Network, and then how do I transpose that into the tactical edge? Because if you do it the other way around, the tactical edge might be a little bit deficient. We didn't want to do that. And so the assistant commandant has a directive, and the commandant has a directive that says to unify the network, and that unification of the network in support of force design. So it helps in terms of the agility, the response, the decision-making, and the advantage that we bring to our warfighters. So I treat the network as an adaptive organism that continues to change. And so that target in terms of 2027 is where we go back to DoD CIO in terms of the controls and the awareness that we have on our network. And that's where we're gauging back and forth in terms of are we meeting the target. And based on our current projection timelines, our POAM, we are ahead of the curve.
Are there certain areas that you're focusing on this year? I know each of the seven pillars, it's not do one and then do another, then do another. You focus them all at the same time. Are there specific initiatives or projects that you can say, hey, for the next 6 or 12 months, here's a major focus for us along the user pillar, or the data pillar, or the network pillar?
One is the impact level 5, the business-to-business relationships in that, which is the communication between the Marine Corps to the Navy or to the other service partners. So that will help in terms of JADC2. Another one is identity management, a federation of identity, or how we are able to see different one identity from different customers or different providers. A third one that I will bring out is the big data platform. We have something in terms of what the service is providing. It's called Big Data Platform Chaos. So BDP Chaos provides in terms of service cyber component back to Cybercom as our JIQUA component for anomaly detection, for performance on the network, and then we can better track in terms of sensors and user analytics down to the tactical edge. The fourth priority that I will bring up is impact level 6. We're moving out on CIPA rollout. So multiple different areas in terms of what's the structure in terms of tactical edge enterprise. I will also add a new thing that I've been trying to figure out too, which is unification of all the Marine Corps community services, facilities-related control services, ICS, the industrial control systems, and the SCADA networks. I'm bringing all that in terms of, so I can figure out risk posture, risk management across the entire terrain, and what are our single points of failure? Because number one priority for the network is assured C2. in crisis, in conflict, and in competition.
On CIO Jane Rathbun talk about industrial control systems and the cyber superiority vision. This is a major push, I think, across DoD. Is there anything that the Marine Corps is taking on when it comes to ICS and OT?
That was a disparate network, one of the 17 that I was mentioning. Once we bring this into the mix-in, what I'm seeing is, again, duplication of hardware, software, routers, technologies. The other thing that I'm seeing is external bring-your-own-devices or external systems that are coming into this. And so what is the totality of the battle space or the cyberspace environment? It keeps growing. And so I need to contain more and more of this. So it may be the defense industrial base. It might be one of the food vendors on a base. So the larger perspective, and then how are we it's not just the Marine Corps' own network, but it's also external networks. For example, people are logging in from home or from various other areas, and so trying to contain all of that and protect all the information. So from my side, it's basically the information and the data side, so because that's what's important for the Marine Corps.
You mentioned the data several times. You mentioned the big data platform. From a cyber perspective and from the network perspective that you're talking about, the data is the new oil, data is king, you can call it whatever you want. When you look at data, what is your perspective of the how you want to deliver that better, faster, cheaper, easier, more credibly, more securely?
I look at it from the cybersecurity side of it. I want to protect the data. I want to secure the data. I want to make sure the data that's going from one person to another person is credible and there's no either an AI, machine learning is not injecting wrong information, or there's not a third party that's injecting into the network. So I look at two layers. There's an underlay and an overlay. The underlay is all the hardware and the technology in terms of the network to move the data, the transport side of it. The overlay is all of the data parameters, the framing, the header, the footer, all of that wrappers that we put on the network, right? That's the software piece of it. That changes, but at the same time, you have a network, for example, fiber optic lines, cell phone towers, they're all resident. They haven't changed much. But we have to look at new technology and saying, how can you dynamically switch? How can you dynamically route? How can you dynamically pick this is the best case, that's the best case, based on availability or bandwidth or jitter or latency concerns, right? Sometimes the satellite hop might be better, but what is the best satellite hop? It could be low Earth orbit. It could be geosynchronous, or it could be a cellular network that's available at that particular time. And I'm also looking at it from, hey, can I ride on somebody else's network too, just to move the data, as long as the data is protected?
Sherry, there's a lot going on at the Marine Corps. I appreciate the update. So let me thank my guest. Sherry Thomas is the Cyber Technology Officer and Technical Director for the Marine Corps Cyberspace Command, the Marine Corps Space Command, and Marine Corps Information Command. Sherry, thanks so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you. And do stay plugged in. There's a information superiority vision, and there's also a cyberspace superiority vision. We're looking at secure, survive, and strike.
I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.